This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hey, this is Trey. Thank you for joining us for a Thursday edition, which is one day of the week that I always look forward to. I get a chance to hear what is on your mind, which I know I say that, but I actually mean it. And I'll tell you why I mean it. I don't learn really anything from myself. I guess that's kind of a self-proving maxim, but I don't learn anything from people that agree with me on everything. And I don't learn a whole lot just sitting around knowing what's already in my head. I like questions. And so that's why I look forward to this podcast. I like, because if it's on your mind, then it tells me maybe it should be on mine too. Or I need to figure out why it's on people's mind. Why would that be something someone asked? So for a guy that, you know, made a living for 20 years, modest living, but a living nonetheless for 20 years, asking questions, I love it. And I get to do it with you, Mary Langston.
I always look forward to it as well. And I enjoyed Tuesday's episode with Shane Beamer. That was fun.
Well, you know, I love Shane Beamer. And a mutual friend of ours went to a dinner and took a picture with Shane and his wife, Emily.
Mm-mm.
And his wife looks like a lot of people think my wife looks like a Hollywood movie star. Mm-hmm. His wife does. So I'm sitting here looking at this picture of Shane Beamer and then someone who looks like Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard, and then someone who looks like a Hollywood actress in between the two of them. And it just doesn't make sense to me until Shane told me that actually really was his wife. I have no idea how that happened. And I mean that in like a nice way. I don't know how that happened. But yes, he's a very nice person. One of the nicest you'll ever meet.
Well, that was good to hear. And I'm glad that he came on Tuesday. That was interesting to hear him talk about football. And then your questions, of course, bringing that out as well. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Well, you know, I don't really like sports, Mary Langston. So that was
no, not at all.
It was a struggle for me. And he's such a, you know, mean person and no enthusiasm, no kindness. Even when I try to kind of bait him a little bit, because I listen to all of his press conferences, and he gets some awful questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, questions that Nick Saban, my Lord, what Nick Saban would do with that question. But there's Shane being just nice as he can be, no matter who asks him. So he is such a good person.
Mm-hmm.
But so are you, and I'm sure so are the people who may have had questions this week. So
yes.
We won't just focus on Shane.
Yeah, we'll move into our questions. We have several today. They're a spectrum, as always. We appreciate y'all sending us your questions, and we hope that you'll keep sending them our way. We'll start with Reggie from Louisiana, who writes, "We all use the word political and politics. What is your definition today, and how has its definition changed or not?"
Well, Reggie from the great state of Louisiana, that's a great question. I mean, I try to go back. I thought I knew this, and I wound up being decently close, I guess, to being right. The politics is a word we kind of borrowed from the Greeks, and it almost literally means like the affairs of the cities. Greece was known primarily for kind of city-states. I mean, sure, you've heard of Athens and Sparta and Thebes, and I guess I could think of a few others if I put my mind to it, but the affairs of the cities and sort of the activities that are associated with making decisions in larger groups. I mean, if you get right down to it, you know, why do we have government? We have government because there are certain things that either individuals cannot all do alone, or there are certain things where we are stronger in a group. So the word itself is a reflection of the activities associated with decision-making in groups or the distribution of resources. I think that's kind of, if you were to look up a textbook definition, that's what it is. So he asked, you know, what's my definition? I try to use like the real definition. We have so many words in the English language, and then there's so many we borrowed from other languages. I try to use the word the way it's like textual, literal definition, but it has become so pejorative. I mean, it has such a negative connotation. And that's been true for most of my life, that the word is just, if you were to poll people or you were to do like a Rorschach ink blot and just get their initial visceral reaction to the word politics, it would be negative. Probably now also with the word government. And so you got to stop and think, I mean, your sheriff is government. Speaking of Shane Beamer, he's the son-in-law of a sheriff, or he used to be a sheriff. He may still be a sheriff. So your sheriff is government. Your district attorney is government. Your public school teachers are government. But the word has a negative connotation to it these days, even though for the most part, we like 90% of that group I just listed. We like cops. We like prosecutors. Some people may like public defenders. I like one. I got one in my family. We like public school teachers. So at its core, the word means related to government or related to the affairs of a city or a state or a nation. Why does it have a negative connotation? Because now it is just about getting elected. It's really not about governing. It's not about the decision making once you win. It's almost now just about winning. The other thing I would remind my good friend Reggie from Louisiana, that there are so many important roles in government that are not elected. They're either appointed or you apply and you're hired. You and I, obviously, Mary Langston, have a mutual friend who works at the United States Attorney's Office in Greenville. She didn't have to run for that. She was hired based on her merit. So I think for my whole life, the word has been used in a less than perfectly pleasant way. Now it's almost a curse word. And I think that's especially true as it relates to those who are seemingly willing to do anything and everything to stay in it. And I mean, I won't dwell on this. I just find it so bitterly interesting. People claim to hate politics. They claim to hate government. And yet they'll do darn near anything to stay in it. It should be limited service to your city, your county, your town, your state, your country. And then you move on to do something else. That's the way it should be.
Well, well said, Trey. And thank you, Reggie, for that question. Our next question is from Tammy, who writes, why do you think the founding fathers created impeachment if it rarely works?
Tammy, I would say this. It should be hard. It was supposed to be hard. It should be reserved for the most serious matters. You know, they use the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors. You know, I wish... I shouldn't say this, but I will anyway. I wish they hadn't used the word misdemeanor, because a misdemeanor to us is almost like a traffic ticket. It's almost like a citation that you get from a, you know, a blue book. That word meant something different when it was used back then. But it has to be reserved for something incredibly serious. There has to be a way to remove someone who is utterly abjectly failing at his or her job. You should not have to wait until the next election to remove someone who is criminal or hopelessly inept or corrupt. In a perfect world, and I am sure in the eyes of our framers, if we were to ask them, it should be bipartisan. It should be done rarely. It should never be done for anything other than a solemn purpose. First of all, we should do a really good job of vetting candidates ahead of time. So it should be rare. If you think that we should only impeach people due to corruption, criminality, near criminality, then you could make a case that we should have vetted them more carefully on the front end. Now, sometimes people fool us, and sometimes people change once they get in office. I don't think it was ever intended. Well, I know that it was never intended to be used as it's used right now, which is, I mean, quite candidly, as a fundraising tool. That's how it's used right now. And we began to see a little bit of that when I was there. I remember many, many, many town halls when I would be asked, why wasn't the House trying to do something to impeach President Obama? And I remember thinking to myself, of course, I never voted for President Obama. I never would vote for President Obama. We don't agree on the size and scope of government. We don't agree on much of anything. But he was elected. So what is that serious crime, that corruption, that thing that is, it really, impeachment is the political death penalty. You are removed from office and you can be barred from forever holding office. It is the most serious punishment we have. So you're asking me at a town hall why we're not impeaching someone just because that's not who you voted for president. So I used to kind of deflect the question by saying, well, I mean, would you really rather have Joe Biden? I mean, because that's who's next in line. What I wanted to say, what I wish I'd said, is start winning elections. If you don't like the president, start winning elections. If you don't like the secretary of fill in the blank, start winning elections. So we saw the beginnings of that. And then, you know, towards the end of the time I was there, there was a group that wanted to make the news for impeaching John Koskinen, who was the IRS commissioner. I mean, honestly, who doesn't want to impeach the IRS commissioner? That's not a heavy lift. But somebody's got to stand up and say, for what? And you know what is interesting is that President Trump wound up keeping him in exactly the same spot he was until his term ended, until the commissioner's term ended. So not only was he not impeached, Koskinen would have happily resigned had President Trump asked for his resignation. President Trump never even asked for his resignation. And then we started hearing about impeachment for Rod Rosenstein. And then we get to Adam Schiff. And Adam Schiff may very well be elected to the United States Senate. And his only claim to fame, near as I can tell, is that he led the twice impeachment of Donald Trump. And he lost both trials. I mean, honestly, my friends that may like him or may lean left, what else has he done? That's his claim to fame, is that twice he presided over the impeachment of a Republican president that he does not like. And so I think others saw the attention that he and other Democrats got for impeaching Donald Trump. And now you have efforts to want to impeach. I mean, I lost track of how many different people, different members of the House Republican Party have moved to impeach. And then, of course, you see this, you know, cannibalism turning upon itself. I mean, vacating the chair is just really another form of impeachment. You remove somebody, now they're threatening to remove the next person. Yeah, our founding fathers wanted it to be used rarely when it was warranted. They wanted it to be serious. They wanted it to be bipartisan. And it has turned into just, I mean, it is like almost completely lost any stigma. There's no like imprimatur of shame attached to it now because it's just used all the time. And I know that that's not why the framers included that as one of the options.
Well, thank you, Trey, and thank you, Tammy, for that question. We'll answer more of your questions when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Our next question is from Kirk, who writes, considering the age of both candidates, what would be the process if, God forbid, something happened to either one of them before the general election?
That's a great question, Kirk. And I got to confess, I may very well be wrong, and I'm sure people will let me know if I am. But the parties pick the nominees, and they can do it by election. They can do it by convention. They could do it by foot race. They could do it by a push-up contest. They could do it by casting lots. You read the Bible all the time, Mary Langston. Do you know how they replaced Judas Iscariot after he killed himself?
I believe the lots were involved. They cast lots, but I can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's like
wrong.
Essentially drawing straws. Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't want to say gambling, but it wasn't like they spent a whole lot of time vetting the two candidates. Maybe they were equally qualified. I don't know. But my point being, parties can pick their nominees however they want to pick them. We just are used to getting to vote on it. But if, you know, God forbid, someone were to have a health issue or someone were to just decide, look, I am the nominee, but I don't want to be the nominee. Maybe they get a terrible medical diagnosis. The parties pick the nominees, and it'd be great. I mean, let's assume it happened in September or October. You don't have time to start having more elections. You got to have a convention. But those delegates, maybe those delegates were committed to a candidate who doesn't even want to be considered anymore. So I think what would happen is party leaders would get together, whoever that is, and, you know, good luck on the Republican side. I can't speak for the Democrat side, but there's so many different factions on the Republican side. God only knows what would happen in terms of, like, picking a nominee. God only knows. I don't want anybody to have any health issues. They both won the nomination fair and square, and I expect them to be in the general election. But if they're not, then depending on which party loses the nominee, you can replace it any way you want to. I don't recommend a foot race. That kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't do well in one of those. Maybe for 10 yards or so. If I can take a break, I might.
Well, thank you for answering that one, too. And thank you, Kirk. Our last question is a little bit lighthearted, and it's from Bill, who writes, how do you decide what type of golf balls to use?
Oh, Mary Langston, I have to correct you. I have to correct
Please
you.
Please do. Go ahead.
Do you mind? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm good with it. Go for it.
Okay. This is not a lighthearted question. This is actually more important than the impeachment question.
Okay. Well,
I mean, what kind of golf ball?
Back.
What kind of golf ball somebody uses? I really can't imagine anything more important than that.
We'll take that back and we'll make this number one.
I'm kidding, obviously.
I know.
Bill, you know, what's funny is earlier I was walking on the golf course that I've been a member of since I was a kid. And we're changing hole number 14. It's the country club of Spartanburg. If people are wondering, that's where my wife and I live. And we're changing hole 14, which is where I got my first birdie when I was a kid, using a Max Fly Dunlop golf ball. I think they're actually coming back. If you live long enough, stuff comes back in style. For the longest time, I kept that ball because I rode on it, first birdie. I don't know. My mom may still have it somewhere. And then I moved to a brand called Tourney, yeah, like tournament, but N-E-Y instead of however you spell tournament. And then Titleist made a ball called Prestige. I've tried Callaway. I've tried almost every golf ball you can possibly try. I have friends, including one on this podcast, who've been known to give me golf balls for birthday or Christmas or something else. My kids give me golf balls. I play Titleist now, so then it becomes a question of which one. The AVX is longer, But you know, when you get old like me, you need some length. But I play the Pro V1X, which is the red. It has red numbers, but I also have plenty of Pro V1s, which is the black number. And I'm not sure it makes a huge difference at my swing speed. It does for really good golfers, and I do play with some really good golfers. It makes a big difference. But if I were playing in a tournament tomorrow, it would be, I would pick one of the golf balls, Mary Langston. I've gone through, my daughter gave me some golf balls. I've gone through all of the ones that Abigail gave me. I would pick one of the golf balls you gave me and play in a tournament with that.
Well, that's very kind of you. I just have to get you some more golf balls then.
No, I don't lose very many. That's the good news. You know, I don't play on a course right. Where, I mean, you have to really try to lose a golf ball on my course. So I don't lose many. They get out of round if you play with them, you know, enough. You want to replace them. But I had a putting contest right before I went and taught a college class. I have a friend that's a federal judge, and we were going to get together and catch up with one another. And I said, let's meet at the club, but bring your putter. I mean, we can talk having a putting contest just as easily as we can talk sitting there drinking sparkling water. So bring your putter. Titleist for me, but I got enough to last me a lifetime. So I'd rather you spend your money like on yourself, Mary Langston. Titleists are expensive. Don't go buy something for yourself. I got enough to last a lifetime.
Oh, it's all good. I'm glad that you got to go out and play. The weather held up for us too. And thank you for answering that last question. I'm sure Bill will be excited to hear what golf balls you use. And the very first one that you did, I didn't know that story about you.
Well, I mean, I played them all. I mean, Callaway makes this ball called Triple Track that, you know, is supposed to help you with your putting. I mean, not to get too detailed on it, but you want distance. But I pick a golf ball based primarily on the way it feels coming off the putter head. I just, you know, I like putting. I used to be a decent putter back, you know, before the whole world was turning around in my head. So I like Titleist, just feel good coming off the putter face. So,
well, those are all the questions we have for today, Trey.
All right. Well, I can't wait till next week. And
Me too.
Maybe somebody asked me about my irons or my wedges or something like that. I know a lot more about that than I do impeachment. So,
and the putters.
And putter, you can ask me putters. I have enough putters. It's embarrassing how many putters I have. But we'll save that all for next week. Thank you. Please keep sending your questions. You all have a great rest of your week/weekend, and we'll see you next week. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.